all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Kayla Williams. She is the director of VA Center for Women Veterans. Ms. Williams, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's a great opportunity to talk about the good things that VA is doing relative to women veterans. But before we get into that, Director Williams, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and what your education is?
Sure. So I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, and went to college in Bowling Green State University, got my bachelor's degree in English literature, and then spent a few years working in the nonprofit sector doing fundraising for public TV and radio stations, and then ended up joining the Army out of Tampa, Florida.
And you spent about 5 years enlisted in the Army. Tell us a little bit about your MOS and your assignments.
So I'd gotten my bachelor's degree in English literature, which felt a little bit like cheating. They gave me a college degree for reading books, which is my favorite hobby. And when I was looking for what to do next, I wanted a challenge. I wanted to be able to access the GI Bill to continue my education in the long run. And I was really excited when I found out that the Army offered the opportunity for me to learn a foreign language. So I chose to become a linguist. I did signals intelligence and was assigned Arabic. I was actually learning Arabic at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California on 9/11. So in that moment, I knew my military career was going to be very different than I might otherwise have expected. I was assigned to the 101st Airborne Division, Air Assault, and spent about a year total in the Middle East, took part of the initial invasion of Iraq in 2003, and came home in 2004.
Well, it's, yeah, as you say, your career, military career took a big deviation. Tell us what you did during your year with Operation Iraqi Freedom.
I took part of the initial invasion, and we drove up from Kuwait to Baghdad, where I went on combat foot patrols with the infantry, something that at the time was fairly unusual for female soldiers, has since become utterly banal. But in those early days, it was still under the old regulations that barred women from direct ground combat arms, jobs, and units. But the need for Arabic speakers so outweighed any policies in place that I ended up going out to do that direct translation between the Iraqi people and infantry troops. That was really the most rewarding part of my military career, getting to see the infantrymen doing their jobs, getting to see my impact on operations and know that I was making a difference every day. We then pushed farther north up to Mosul and Tal Afar and beyond. I spent a lot of time on Sinjar Mountain where the Yazidis live. So if you follow the news, I'm sure you can guess that it's been very emotionally challenging for me to watch what's happened in that region in the years since I came home. And while we were up in that area, I was actually able to do more of the job that I had been trained to do, which was the signals intelligence. And it was very austere out on the side of the mountain for many months. I was the only woman with first about 7 men and then about 20 men, very forward deployed, probably half an hour even from helicopter or quick reaction force if anything had gone south. But it was a fairly safe area. The last few months that I was in Iraq, I spent in Mosul where we had more amenities like running water and electricity, which was terrific. But the insurgent activity was on the uptick at that stage, and being in a city, we got mortared. And so that was the downside to being in a different location towards the end.
Well, it's a long ways from the Midwest in Ohio to those duty stations. One of the things I'm interested in, Kayla, you had mentioned at the outset that you did this to get a little GI Bill activity and be able to do some further education. Did you have that opportunity?
I did. So when I left active duty, it was in part because the man that I fell in love with was severely wounded in Iraq, and I left active duty to help him on his road to recovery. He was at Walter Reed. When I left active duty, I joined him in the D.C. area and tried, without much success, to learn how to be a good caregiver to him while also reintegrating into civilian life myself. I did use my GI Bill to get my master's degree in international relations at American University, and with that increased education was able to spend about 8.5 years doing research at the RAND Corporation.
Well, our veteran radio listeners are very familiar with RAND Corporation. We've had some of their senior scientists and researchers on previously to talk about the report, so I'm sure that that time at RAND for you was a great opportunity to think deeply and research in depth of veteran and military issues. Was that the space that they had you working in?
Yes, I came on initially to do work in international security and defense policy, but as my passion for veterans issues really deepened as I tried to navigate the space myself and help my husband navigate the space, I was very, very lucky that they were supportive of me gradually shifting my research portfolio more in that direction, and I was able to do some research on service member and veteran psychological health and traumatic brain injury, as well as use of education benefits and more. And that experience, I think, really prepared me well for the next stage in my career. It grounded me very deeply in the importance of providing evidence-based interventions and not just kind of throwing everything at the wall to see what would stick.
Well, you've had a very distinguished career up to the point, certainly, of becoming the director of the VA Center for Women Veterans. It includes such things as being a member of the VA Survey of Experiences of Returning Veterans Study Advisory Board, a Truman National Security Project Fellow, a 2013 White House Woman Veteran Champion of Change, a 2015 Lincoln Award recipient, and an author. But let's move to the Center of Women Veterans that the VA has in place, and tell us a little bit about what its mission is.
The center was actually established by law in the mid-90s because, I believe, of the first Gulf War. As the number of women in the military was climbing and folks were becoming aware of the fact that since VA was established, when the number of women in the military was limited by law to just 2%, many of the facilities and services and programs just weren't optimized to serve that portion of the population. And at this point, the women are one of the fastest growing subgroups within the larger veteran population. The number of women veterans is climbing while the number of male veterans is declining. So we're just under 10% of the veteran population now and projected to grow up to 15%, matching our representation in the total force by probably 2035 or so. And the Center for Women Veterans serves to monitor and coordinate VA's administration of healthcare and benefit services and programs for women veterans, advocate for cultural transformation, both inside VA and in the general public, to recognize the service and contributions of women vets and military women, and to raise awareness of the responsibility to treat women veterans with dignity and respect. I am, in addition to, you know, doing this in my professional life, I am a VA user. I use VA healthcare exclusively. I have for several years now. As I mentioned, I used my GI Bill benefits in the past. I've used home loan guarantee. So I know very, very viscerally how important VA can be for veterans in ensuring that they can transition to the next phase of their lives successfully and thrive. I also have personally experienced some of the ways that we don't always get it right, especially for women. There are times when I go into VA for medical appointments and the first person who sees me walk in asks if I'm there with my husband, for example. So those little things that I'm able to just blow off because I'm at a pretty good place in my life could be really deeply off-putting for somebody with a trauma history, So we are working very hard on that cultural transformation and employee education to ensure that all of our employees recognize women as veterans and greet them as such when they come in the door, and really afford them the same dignity and respect that our male comrades receive kind of by default.
We have the opportunity here to talk to veterans all around the country, and you're in the Washington, D.C. area. I can tell you that out in other parts of the country, certainly in your home state of Ohio and elsewhere where there aren't a lot of active duty bases and there are not a lot of active duties service members, I think that, I'll call it loneliness, is felt by women veteran even more, that there just isn't a whole lot of community. And so the work that you're doing to add a little bit of community in this cultural transformation outside those active duty areas is probably even more important than that it's being done where there are active duty military.
Another thing that I've brought to the center since taking over about 2 years ago is use of the digital domain to play a component in that that effort that you're talking about. So we know that social media can be an important way for folks, especially those who are in more rural areas, more remote areas, or those who have mobility challenges and can't necessarily get to spaces that are occupied physically by other vets as easily as others. So we have been launching as many ways as we can to get folks, women veterans, connected to the information resources that they need using digital means. It's not, of course, the only method we're going to use. I know not everyone is online, but I will say my mom posts on Facebook more than I do. So I know that, you know, it can be folks of all generations. So if anybody's interested, they can go to our website, which is va.gov/womenvet. And sign up to get newsletters in a number of different areas. We send out a weekly newsletter, and then we send out monthly updates on events and medical research related to women veterans and messages from the center and a quarterly resources update. And we've also finally gotten approval, very, very excited about this, from VA to launch our own social media accounts. So you can follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. Both of those are at VA Women Vets, and you can see all of the news and information and resources that we post there and engage in dialogue and conversation with other women veterans around the country and around the world. And all of those news and resources are curated by women veterans for women veterans.
And I have to say that having been on that site, I encourage our Veteran Radio listeners to go there to va.gov/womenvet. The right-hand navigation bar will clearly lay out a sort of a site navigation and be able to get you to whether it's frequently asked questions or events that are coming up or the social media, Facebook, Twitter, the blogs, that sort of stuff. It's really pretty easy to find, and I commend you on that. Sometimes VA has, or the just government in general, has such complicated websites. You can't find what you want, and you just leave in frustration. So I'm glad you're working to avoid that.
Thanks. It was one of the first things I tackled when I came on board was revamping the site.
Could you talk a little bit about some of the projects and programs that the Center for Women Veterans has to draw folks in and make sure that the messages are being communicated?
Sure. So one of the things that I started thinking about right away was how to connect with people emotionally, because I definitely remember from my time as an enlisted soldier that, you know, PowerPoint is not the way to get through to people, and a dry recitation of facts and figures is not necessarily the best way to communicate a compelling message. So last year in 2017, I partnered with the Veteran Artists Project to put on an exhibit of art by women veterans. We did a call for submissions. We got submissions from over 100 women vets around the country and selected 10 that we created storyboards of. So these really nice posters that featured an image of the artist's work, photos of her in and out of uniform, and a brief bio. And we had those hung in 10 VA medical centers around the country throughout March, which is Women's History Month, and then sent them on to additional sites over the course of the year. This was aimed at helping our VA employees and providers, as well as some of our older male veteran patients, recognize that women are veterans and learn more about our strength, diversity, and resilience, and also help women vets when they enter a VA feel more welcome and recognized by seeing images of themselves, of other women veterans, up on the walls. That was picked up and did go beyond VA as well. We had them displayed in some Starbucks locations, on the Intrepid during Fleet Week, in the lobby of the Broadway Musical Bandstand, and in the Patriots outpost of the PGA at Sawgrass. So I was really excited at how well-received that effort was, and we followed it this year with the Women Veteran Athletes Initiative. So in partnership with Team Red, White, and Blue, or Team RWB, we did a series of portraits of 10 women veteran athletes. Our photographer was Stacey Pearsall, who is herself a woman veteran and renowned photographer. Those storyboards were featured in 10 VAs, again, throughout March, which is Women's History Month, and they're now traveling to additional sites around the country over the course of the next year. We also featured online extensive digital support package for this, so you can listen to podcasts or read blogs by and about the women veterans and see additional portraits of them. I was so excited that when we chose these women, we were really able to highlight a diverse group of women veterans that really reflect our population. So we have women vets from all five branches of service, different eras, different ethnicities and backgrounds, and different ability levels. And by showcasing how we have women veterans who are in wheelchairs and of a variety of different body types and ability levels, still engaging in athletic pursuits, we're hoping to, again, showcase that strength and resilience that women veterans have, and also encourage women veterans and all veterans to stay healthy and active throughout their life cycle with the support of VA, adaptive sports, or rec therapy programs if necessary, or in partnership with community organizations like Team RWB, because of the importance that physical activity can have on wellness throughout one's life cycle. And these women are absolutely inspirational. One of them, Angela Madsen, who is in a wheelchair, has rode solo across the Atlantic Ocean. Another, Candace Caesar, was once told she would never walk again, went on to participate in 25 marathons in 25 states over 3 years. So seeing how these women are overcoming adversity to stay healthy and active and maintain this incredibly positive attitude, it has genuinely changed my life. So I've ended up losing about 10 pounds because my excuses about not going to the gym are totally gone. If Angela Madsen can row across the Atlantic Ocean without a support boat, and she's wheelchair-bound, I can make it to the gym even when I'm not feeling great. So increased my own fitness level.
Proving guilt has worked on the director of the VA Center for Women and Veterans, Kayla Williams, who we're talking to here on Veterans Radio. And I want to say, again, both the Women Veteran Athletes Initiative as well as the Women Veterans Art Exhibit is prominently displayed on the website in that navigation bar that's easy to find and work your way through. So I'd really encourage people to take a look at that. I'd like you to talk a little bit, too, if you would, about the National Women Veterans Summit of 2017 and the various webcasts that are available.
Yeah, absolutely. So the last time that VA had a national-level summit for women veterans had been in 2011. So I started planning one very soon after coming on board. And unfortunately, the best laid plans of mice and men, as they say, go awry. So it was scheduled in Houston in August of 2017. And unfortunately, Hurricane Harvey bore down on us and forced us to close down early. I think that the universe was afraid of having 800 women vets in one place at one time. So
that may have been it. Or Mother Nature just wanted you all to disperse. So,
but I refused to allow the weather to defeat us, so worked with our subject matter experts across VA and community partners to hold the sessions by cyber seminar after the fact, and we've collected those on the website in the page devoted to the summit, so folks can go on and listen to cyber seminars about women veterans employment, entrepreneurship, and many, many other topics that I hope will be helpful for them as they want to learn more about what VA and other partners have available for them or what issues we're concerned about.
Well, I think it's a great way to reach people who would not have otherwise been able to make it, and those things are still there and very relevant and very usable now in this format. Kayla, I guess one of the questions I have for you is relative to your role as the director here and your interaction or what types of interaction you might have with the Secretary of the VA as you try to advance this cultural transformation.
So the director of the Center for Women Veterans serves as the primary advisor to the Secretary on department policies, programs, and legislation that affect women veterans. And we also work closely with the other internal VA offices, both the three major administrations of health benefits and the National Cemetery Administration, as well as other staff offices on programs that serve women veterans and care and services and benefits for our women veterans to ensure that we're doing the best job we possibly can to ensure equity between men and women in accessing and using and being satisfied with all of the resources that we have available to veterans. We also liaison with other federal agencies and state and local organizations, as well as those in the nonprofit community to encourage them to optimize their programming to serve women veterans as a core part of their constituency.
Well, I think it's really, this work is so important, not only for the women veterans, but for all Americans. I'm a spouse of a female veteran. There are plenty of dads and uncles and mothers and sisters around who need to understand the image of the woman veteran today and the vital role they play in the national defense and the immense contributions that they're making to the country and the corresponding obligation of the country then to take care of those women veterans. So I think the part of the message hopefully you're getting out to people is to think about women veterans in that larger context.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for your wife's service and for your service as a family member, in addition to so many other ways. You know, another component that I think you alluded to, but I'll make a little more explicit about the importance of some of the work that we do is that it benefits more than just women veterans. So I'll give an example. Years ago, before I came on board at VA, I was pushing from the outside as an advocate hard to encourage VA medical centers to get changing tables in bathrooms because from my perspective, this was important because women are more likely to be the primary caregivers of small children, and because women vets skew younger than male veterans, and so we're more likely to have small children. And having to change a baby diaper on the floor of a bathroom is just really disgusting. Nobody wants to have to do that. And that's something that we've made tremendous progress on. It makes a huge difference, but it hasn't just affected young women. It has also been beneficial to our male veterans, both younger male veterans who are bringing in their own kids, and in today's era when you may have grandparents who are serving as the caregivers to their grandchildren while the parents work or because of, you know, difficult life circumstances. And if you have grandparents who have to bring their grandchildren in when they have VA appointments, it helps them too. So when we improve privacy and environment of care in VA medical centers, to improve things for women veterans because, you know, an 8-man room in the previous era is not going to work for women today. When we improve things to go down to 2-person rooms, that doesn't just benefit women. This is also more beneficial for men today, too, who also have a higher expectation for privacy. So these improvements that we're striving towards are going to serve and help and assist all of our veterans, and we're really excited about helping to raise awareness of how these efforts that we're making will be beneficial for everyone.
Well, we want to certainly thank you, Kayla Williams, for the work that you're doing as director of the VA Center for Women Veterans, and we wanted to suggest to our veteran radio listeners that they go to www.va.gov/womenvet and check out the Center for Women Veterans. Again, Kayla, thank you for your time today on Veterans Radio.
It was truly my pleasure, and I hope that you have me back sometime.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.